Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. I am Jake Cunningham and with me this week is Ursi Kalensi.
Hey, hey.
Daniela Verictanidi.
Hello.
And Samuel Howlett.
Hi.
So this week we are talking about Antonio Campos's Christine, the story of Christine Chubbuck, a news reporter in the 70s, and that's all we're going to say for now. Now, this film and Christine's story was told in documentary form in a film called Kate Plays Christine at Sundance Film Festival this time last year, at the same time this film was released as well. Very odd turn of events. Mm. And so that made us look into films that have had documentaries and then had traditional narrative films. So we're looking at Man on Wire and The Walk and things like that. So for our podcast pitch, this opening section now where we're pitching theoretical films that will no doubt go into production one day, I want to ask you guys about what story that you have seen told in documentary form would you like to see adapted into more of a traditional fiction film narrative form structure? All right, so that is this week's podcast pitch. Let's start with Danny.
I was thinking about it, and I wanted to see Senna made into a fictional film, because it has like a narrative already that it seems quite easy to make into a fictional film. He's a very interesting character, and there's already like drama and love stories as well, but also like just general interest about the Formula One world. So I think that could be done.
Yeah, we saw Ron Howard's Rush as well, which took a sport which admittedly I have no interest in, and made it interesting, as did Senna, the documentary. Yeah. But I can totally see why you would want to see that too. Give it to Ron Howard.
Yeah.
All right, Ursi?
So Senna was actually on my list, okay. But it was not the final one, but good. I like it. Good shout. I was, so I didn't know what to pick because I thought to myself, Grizzly Man might be an interesting pick.
Oh, yeah.
I thought of that too.
Yeah. but then I thought it's a little bit similar to Christine, so let's not copy too much. And then there's Searching for Sugar Man, I thought was a good shout as well, because you can make a nice little musical biopic. But then I make two picks effectively.
Why not?
All right, my first one is an animation, and it's Blackfish.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it would be, you just animate the whole thing. I don't think Pixar is going to want that one, but it would be all about following Tilikum's, like the orca's perspective, as the fish is, the orca is fished out of the ocean and put into SeaWorld. So it will be like a very and a weird character study, but in cartoon form.
That sounds like the saddest cartoon.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see you going to SeaWorld after that.
That makes Watership Down sound like easy.
Yeah. And so that's my number one pitch. And obviously, if nobody goes for that, because it's a really, really sad cartoon, I would go for Grey Gardens, which is the two recluse socialites in New York. And I would actually make it a little bit of a comedy, like a tragic comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that, yeah. That's a great, great shout. I'll do mine now. We'll save yours, Sam, shall we?
As you wish.
Yeah, so you've got to end on a high.
Okay. All right.
So I have picked one episode from the 2003 BBC series Seven Wonders of the Industrial World.
Whoa.
And in particular, the one episode, The Bell Rock Lighthouse. And this was an amazing lighthouse that started being built in 1807 by Robert Stevenson. And the thing about this lighthouse, which I can tell you guys are already interested, it's the world's oldest sea-washed lighthouse, which means it's not on the coast. It's actually out in the water. And the masonry on this lighthouse is such high quality, it has never been replaced. And it was built over 200 years ago.
Who would you have starring in
that? Who would play the lighthouse?
whoever it is, it's Daniel Day-Lewis. But Daniel Day-Lewis as Robert Stevenson, like, this guy's a legend in engineering. But the story is phenomenal. So these guys, for the first time, like, this thing took ages to build. They were living on a boat for 20 hours a day and then had to row a mile to get to this section of rock in the middle of the ocean where they would then pickaxe at the rock to just start leveling it to make a surface. The first season that they could do it, because they couldn't do it in winter, all they were building was like a shed on stilts so that when they came back the next year, they could stay on the rock rather than having to stay on the boat. That's how long it took. A year in, they had not actually built anything except a shed. And it's like people died. People lost their fingers. People's legs got broken off. Stevenson's kids died whilst it was being made. But prior to this, six ships were being lost on this rock a year and all their men. That's how important this lighthouse is. And that was part of the Industrial Wonders of the World series on BBC. And there were six other wonders as well, which could all have amazing films. And this could just be one of that series.
So you're talking about a shared universe?
Yeah. Well, that shared universe is, you know,
the real
history.
World.
But that is my pick. Sam. Mm-hmm.
So my pick is a Netflix documentary that came out in 2014 called Virunga. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yes.
So this had a documentary maker, Orlando von Einzendel. He went to the Virunga National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo with the intention of documenting the progress of Virunga National Park, which is home to the last mountain gorillas in the world. And that's all he intended to happen in this documentary, and just sort of look at how sort of the oil industry is sort of threatening this park. But while he was there, the M23 rebellion took place. And then it becomes this really, really tense kind of... Everyone's really scared because this rebellion is about to sweep through the national park. And so they're worried about... There's also you follow different perspectives. There's sort of the documentary maker. There's the chief warden of the park. The gorilla caregiver. There's a French journalist there as well. All these different people sort of coming together by accident. They had no idea that this was about to take place when they came to this park. And... yeah, it's kind of scary that they're there by accident and they now have to be prepared for this army to cascade through this park.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'd make a really nice fiction film. A, because it's not a very well-known story or a very well-known documentary, so I think the transition would be quite easy to fiction film. And also you've got these really interesting characters and this really great story as well.
Excellent. Right. We'd take this to the board. So last week, our podcast pitch, what we eventually funded, was Jenna's Natalie Portman Gareth Gates biopic, which obviously we look forward to seeing. Where are we putting our money? What are we funding this week? Where are we Weinsteining?
I'd Weinstein cartoon Blackfish because
yeah,
it just sounds
that sounds horrible,
bizarrely bleak. But yeah. Also, I would watch it. Would it be like hand drawn animation or CG?
I think hand drawn.
Yeah.
Just to kind of
watercolors.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh great. My God. Yes.
Princess Kaguya style.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. There we are. Cartoon Blackfish coming to cinemas very, very soon. It can't take that long to do a hand-drawn animation, can it?
I don't think so.
No. coming this summer. Right, so let's move on to Christine Chubbuck, the news presenter from the 70s. Now, this film, it raised a little issue about spoilers because this is a true story. And normally on our podcast, we have our main review, and then we have our spoiler section at the end where we talk about any revelations. And as a kind of code for us about what we can talk about, we generally go by the trailer of a film. And as much information as you listeners get in the trailer is as much as we'll try and go into in our main review before going into any spoilers. And in the trailer for Christine is a particular part of the script which leads to an important part of the film, shall we say, in which Christine narrates and says that we will see live on TV an attempted suicide. And so that's what we're going to talk about now in this review section. Because really, this film is not about that event, is it?
No, not at all.
Mm-hmm. This is a character study and looking at the way that the world has treated her, the way that she treats the world, and how ultimately she didn't have the safe spaces and treatment that she needed, really.
Yeah, I think if you go on like the Wikipedia page for the film, at the top, it reveals something.
Mm.
Whereas on IMDb, it does not. And the trailer also, as you said, skirts around it a bit. I mean, listening to this podcast, I think you know. But if you don't, we will hold back, I guess, from that.
And I'm sure, and what the film is trying to achieve is not that her life is being defined by a certain event.
Yeah, which I guess up until this film, it was.
Mm.
Because I think the story of Christine Chubbuck was sort of a water cooler moment. You know, like you met someone, oh, did you hear about this thing that happened? I can't remember the person's name, but this thing happened once, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I think the writer, who, remind me of his name?
Craig Shilovich.
I think he found out about the story of Christine in one of those online videos, like
10 craziest things that have happened on live TV.
Yeah, the 10 weirdest TV moments. And she was just a bit of trivia.
Yeah.
And whereas now he saw that and think, oh, I need to make something more of this.
Yeah.
This is way too sad that that's all she's become.
And it is a smaller story than the likes of, I don't know, Sully, for instance, where, like, it's not really a spoiler to say that in Sully, he lands the plane.
Yeah.
So there is so much to talk about in this film. I think at the centre of it is Rebecca Hall, who gives an astonishing performance as Christine. And I think we really go on a journey with her and her performance. And at the start, there is an inkling that something is offset, but she's confident in herself. You see that she likes her work, and you do the way that this film builds within her, or the story builds within her, you can really see in her physicality as well, as well as the way that she actually speaks too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite telling that the first shot that you see of Christine in this movie is through a television set.
Mm.
And then you hear her interviewing Richard Nixon, who at the time is going through his impeachment process after the Watergate scandal. And she then, obviously, the camera goes closer, goes through the TV and onto her in real life. And she is sitting around a table, and in front of her is an empty chair. And all of a sudden it becomes this kind of very strange interview that she's having with Richard Nixon and herself, because one of her main phrases in that moment is, are they really after you, or is this just all paranoia?
Mm.
And you can kind of feel like she might be asking that to herself.
Oh, yeah.
As well. And I love it because through that first shot, you see her as enormously ambitious, as an enormously ambitious reporter, and yet so kind of frozen and insecure at the same time. And it's such a wonderful introduction to this character.
Yeah, and she questions herself in that moment as well, and she said, "Do you think I'm nodding too much? Do you think that looks
pathetic?"
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's such a minute detail that we would never think about when you're watching an interview.
And the flowers.
Yeah.
She from early on, she's sort of worried about the flowers on the desk. Like, these are fake. They should be real. And it's sort of brushed aside, but that comes up later, and that's sort of a slight early inkling of her mental health, I guess, that she's obsessing over these small minute details, and eventually they escalate and she blows them way out of proportion.
Yeah, and I think when we see it in the opening scene, that's reflective as the way a lot of people may see people with mental health problems, that they may not actually see it. Like, it's happening right in front of you, but because if you're not paying as much attention and you're looking through something through a screen, for instance, you're not going to notice it.
Did it take you a while to kind of work out that she is a troubled woman? Or
yeah, I was about to say that. It was very gradual.
Yeah.
So at first, she's very confident. She knows where she's standing, it seems at least. And then gradually, there's little moments when you're like, oh, something's not right here.
Mm.
And then you kind of realize through her relationship, mainly with her mom, I think, that there's something wrong.
Yeah, but it's not like it's falling down or something where she suddenly snaps.
No, exactly. There's not a moment.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I think it's interesting comparing this to Manchester by the Sea as well, in that we're given a very specific reason for his state of mind. We're not for Christine.
Yeah, but I think like the difference is that's grief and that's his reaction to an event, whereas this film does well in saying that
there's no
reason. Yeah, having trouble with mental health does not always relate to something that happened.
And I think her relationship with her mum is really important in that, in that her mum's very nice.
Hmm.
And they have this quite a nice relationship. I mean, it's slightly maybe too close at times, I think. That's the point that she says, oh, it's weird that we still live together when I'm 30, etc.
Yeah.
But it's not a troubled relationship. There's not like her mum was cruel to her, which gives context for her condition. It's just the way she is.
I feel at first it kind of tricks us to believe that her mom might not be as good. Not as good, but like, because she's like, oh, you smoke pot all the time and this and that. And it feels like, oh, she's having issues with her mom. But then we kind of realise that her mom is not necessarily the issue. But
This is it. There is not one thing that you can pin this on.
Yeah.
So at the start of the film, as you said, we have Christine, who is an ambitious reporter, a bit of a perfectionist, and it kind of gets told at the start of the film that there is going to be an opportunity for promotion as well, that there is to go to Baltimore and work in a news network there. And she's working alongside George, the anchor, who is played by Michael C. Hall, who people may know from Dexter. And that's this kind of dynamic, is the new working in the newsroom and then Christine's life at home.
Yeah, and I think the newsroom is done really nicely in such a way that when Christine attempts suicide at the end, you're not prepared for that because these are all really kind of quirky, interesting characters. It's not just focused on Christine solely. You have this kind of network, like the film Network, dynamic of this crew of people who are struggling in the ratings and they're all vying for this promotion. And that could be the plot of the film. If you don't know what's coming, then that you could think that's the plot.
Yeah.
It's about this network.
It's interesting that you brought that up, because obviously it's rumored that Paddy Chayefsky, who actually wrote Network, was influenced by the story of Christine Chubbuck, and you can see similarities between the main character in the film Network and Christine herself, because obviously they're both angry about very, very similar things. But I think I agree with the network setting of this movie is very interesting, because apart from Christine, everybody else is working as an ensemble cast.
Yeah.
There isn't really anybody that necessarily stands out because this is a movie about Christine Chubbuck. This is a movie that centers mainly around Rebecca Hall's performance, and everybody else feels like they're there in order to not bring out her neuroses, but mostly to accentuate them, to underline them.
So we actually talked about Jackie last week as well, which is this, you've got this individual portrait of a woman, and in fact it's the name, that woman's first name is the title of the film, and that idea of her world kind of crumbling.
Sort of pressures of being in the media.
Yeah.
And as well, they're not at all like anti-heroines or anything, but they aren't entirely sympathetic all the way through, which is often the case with female characters in film. They're often sort of nurturing, maternal types. And here you have two women that are very troubled and very complicated. I think it's really great that we finally have these kind of roles that women have now.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting to see that Jackie is mainly centered around grief and loss, whereas Christine, it's something different. It's depression and paranoia. And it's also the irony of both of the lives of these women are defined by a gunshot to the head.
Now, talking about the depression and paranoia in the film, what I thought was really excellent in this film was the way that the frustrations of having to deal with mental health problems, both as the sufferer and the people around her as well. And I think you see a little bit of that through George, the anchor of the station. And you kind of think at the start of the film that there's this unrequited love that Christine has for George, and that he's a bit of a dog, and that he's talking to other women, and that he's been mean to her or something. But actually, that's all in her head. We actually see he's not a baddie or anything, and he's trying to talk to her and he's trying to ask her out. And I think it's just this paranoia in Christine's mind that when things don't happen, it's because of her, or when things do happen, it's her fault. And this building up of minute details or things that she can't affect, really, that just build up and build up in her mind as being like really awful and induce this anxiety that eventually peaks. And there's just these contradictions running throughout, that she wants help, and that would be great if she could get help, and then when it's offered, it's not taken. Or she would love to go out with George or talk to George, and when that's offered, she immediately questions it. Like, she's never willing to actually take or accept anything that's given to her without a...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Immediately, effectively offering for it to be taken away, or thinking that it should be taken away.
Yeah. George had a nice quote in that scene, the party scene. He was saying that we all have different versions of ourselves competing to be us. And I thought that kind of summed up a bit how she was feeling.
That's a really lovely quote, and that sums up a lot of the film as well, and the different ways that Christine is seen, the way that she sees herself, the way that she's seen by her work colleagues, by her mother, and the way that she's seen on the screens as well.
Yeah. I think that's expressed really nicely in when she goes on the date with George, and he takes her to this strange kind of almost cult-like counselling session when they play the game Yes But, where you say something you want in life and then you have someone else replies with Yes But, etc., etc., and that's where I think a lot of things are revealed about Christine in that scene.
Yeah, that's horrible therapy.
Yeah,
that was surprisingly, that was really the proper rise of self-help in the 70s, and I thought that I absolutely adored Rebecca Hall in that scene, because she, her character, because I think that's a fictional kind of addition to the Christine Chubbuck timeline, but the person that she has in front of her going, asking her these questions.
Let's go through this. So it would be,
what do you want in life?
I want a promotion at work. Then it would be,
have you asked for one? Yes, but I've already asked for one and I haven't got it.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you be better at your job? Yes, but I'm always trying to be better at my job.
Yeah. Why don't you change your way of thinking? Yes, but then I wouldn't be doing what I love.
Yeah.
And
yes, but don't you think you should compromise?
Mm.
And it goes on. And it's like a vicious circle, isn't it?
It's like her conscience is trying to fight her mental health by going, yes, but you can do also this. Yes, but you can do that. And then I think it was the final question where she talks about the fact that due to a cyst in her uterus, she needs to have one ovary removed. And that severely diminishes her chances of having children. And through saying that, she comes to the slow realization of what that actually means, of her actually maybe ending up childless. And that woman, like, her last question is, can't you find a man?
Mm.
And she's like, yes, but I haven't gotten to fall in love with me.
Mm.
And she looks at George, and it's that moment where it finally hits her and possibly the audience that this is never meant to be.
Mm.
Because you can't force somebody to return feelings, especially the feelings that she has, willingly or just like that, because it's obviously not there. And it's so sad in that one look that Rebecca Hall gives.
And also it'd be tough to fall in love with someone that takes you to therapy on the first date. right. But that is a really wonderful scene, and it captures what is happening in Christine's head, that she is constantly given a situation and is questioning, contradicting herself all the time. She is saying yes, but to every element of her life, as that when it tries to proceed in any way. And I imagine she also feels that the world around her is doing the same thing to her. And ultimately these two frustrations collide in extraordinary fashion. And at the end of that scene, the camera kind of shifts to a close-up of a front-on close-up of Christine, and she's wearing a dress in this scene, and she's got this like lovely long black hair, and in that moment it's covering the straps of the dress, and it appears that she, like with a trick of the camera and the costume, that she is naked in this moment, and she has been completely stripped of everything, and we are revealed Christine in front of us in this little moment. And that would bring me on, as we talked about with Jackie as well, the production design in this film, whether that is the costume or the sets or looking at the lighting as well, it's extraordinary. It's really, really expertly executed.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought the color palette is obviously very faithful to the 70s.
Mm.
And that decade was rife with colors that are non-existent in textile manufacturing now, but it was interesting because they had a lot of brown, a lot of beige, a lot of yellow, and surprisingly enough, and I'm trying to rack my brain thinking about it, but I can't find anything. You don't see really red in that film. There's not really like a crimson red, which I'm thinking like the only reason that is that they're saving it to the end.
Mm. Mm.
And it's a really nice addition.
I mentioned the lighting in there. There's a lovely scene, which we've mentioned actually a couple of times already, in which in George and Christine chat at a party and they're playing pool, and the light is bouncing off the green of the pool table, around their face, and it's the, this kind of like vertigo lighting that is just is nauseating. It's such as it's simple to do, make things green and make people feel sick and give people a green face, but it's effective as well. And the way that Christine's face is lit is really wonderful, because Rebecca Hall has a remarkable face. She's got these amazing, humongous eyes that are so expressive, and they give their points. It's sunny, it's Florida, and so in the natural light, it's lovely. And then at times, she's given this horror lighting, and you see her cheekbones and the chin and the shadows in her eyes as well, and she's. Because of her long black hair, it's like the Ring at times.
Yeah, or like Vampira.
Yeah, the way that she is made to appear on screen, and then it will contrast to the lovely sunny natural light of Florida. That is, I think, a fair representation of the states of mind that we find her in.
She's also like physically, she's kind of awkward and gangly. Like she seems like really tall, very long limbed, and she's sort of slightly hunched, especially when she wears that. The long black dress when she goes on the date with George, and she's got this really long flat black hair. She just kind of looks really uncomfortable in her own skin all the time.
The way, like, what she walks, like what she does with the physicality of holding something within her that is pain. Like whether that's mental and physical.
Yeah.
And she's walking with someone who's dealing with that.
I really loved in this film Tracy Letts.
Yes,
which we haven't talked about yet. Yeah. So Tracy Letts had this kind of weird career where he wrote the plays of Killer Joe and August Osage County, and then he was in Homeland season 4. That's where I first saw him as an actor. And no one does anger and frustration better than Tracy Letts.
Mm-hmm.
And the screaming battles he has with Christine, I think, are really great. They're the parts that kind of remind me of Network a bit as well.
Yeah, so this is the boss of the network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, for me, Tracy Letts, whenever Tracy Letts is in a film, I'm slightly more interested in that film.
Yeah.
For some reason, he just commands my attention when he's on screen.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
I think his character is really good as well, because there's every time him and Christine, so Michael the boss and Christine share a screen or share the same room, It turns into a shouting match, and you have... I always thought that the dynamic between the two of them was always really interesting from the beginning, because one of the first things that he says to her, as if it's an insult, he says, "You're a feminist." And you're, ooh, okay. And all of a sudden, it dawns on you that this is a workplace in the 1970s where women are just getting really into it and are trying to break barriers that were there previously. And Tracy Letts is so good at conveying his frustration, not only at the fact that that the network's ratings are failing, but he also has to accommodate what the 70s bring. So that's more women, that's more inclusion, that's more understanding. And he is very much a product, I think, of the 50s and 60s, much like Christine's mom as well. They are part of an older world, like a world of JFKs and a world, and this is the Nixon kind of era, and obviously subsequently Ford. But it was it's interesting that when they butt heads, it's basically two very different people that have very different views of what the world should be.
Yeah, there's a bit where she mentions that she goes along to a fire scene, and she says that she's like Bob Woodward.
Yeah, which that's her idol, isn't it?
Yeah,
and you can even from the opening when she's interviewing Nixon.
Yeah,
that's because that's like the height of journalism, I guess, isn't it? The investigative journalist, and that's what she really wants to be. And she's like, "Oh, we need to do this and this and this."
Yeah, there's some really lovely, like Gordon Willis style slow zooms in this film as well, which is so reminiscent of the paranoia films of the 70s as well. And it's just when you. Starting on a wide shot and then just gradually, slowly zooming into Christine. It's very satisfying.
That fire scene also reminds me of Nightcrawler as well.
Yeah. Kind of accident. I think there's a lot of Nightcrawler
like
in this.
Kind of accident chases.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
Yeah. You also spoke about kind of close-ups and, well, from wide to close-up. That's also something that we saw in Pablo Larraín's Jackie as well. Mm-hmm. And I love this. This is really, because you talked about having women kind of back to doing films like these and character studies, just having these claustrophobic close-ups on a woman whose hair and face are so thin and so pale, and then the wide angles that he has, she looks as if she's alone. She looks as if she's by herself, like anybody else in that wide is far away from her,
yeah,
or seems far away from her.
Yeah. Right, we should probably move on to our spoiler section. Hopefully we've carefully skirted around the Wikipedia spoiler inducing
everything but
but I'm sure you probably know, but if not, do go and watch Christine. It's in cinemas, but it's also on Curzon Home Cinema, so if you're not near anywhere that's showing it, just log on to curzonhomecinema.com and you can watch it right away there. And this is a performance that should have been up for Best Actress at the Academy Award nominations.
It's the best performance Rebecca Hall's given.
And hopefully we will see more of Rebecca Hall.
Yes.
She's always, like, it's been 10 years since The Prestige now. 11 years. It's been a long time coming, and it's great to see Rebecca Hall getting a performance that people are talking about. And more of it, I say. But let's get on to the spoiler section. So that's your spoiler warning from now. And we are back.
I knew going in.
Yeah, me too.
And I think a lot of people will. Because I think the way you're going to get people to see this film is by telling them, unfortunately, is by kind of, in a weird sort of sensational factor, oh, this is about the woman who shot herself in the head live on television. That's going to make people go and see it immediately.
Yeah.
But then I think the film doesn't seem to... Because I, in my head, I pictured that it would open with her doing that delivery of, you're about to see the first attempt at suicide on TV, and then would be 3 weeks earlier. But it doesn't. And it's not like probing the audience, saying, oh, it's going to happen soon, get ready. It happens very naturally, and I think you're quite happy just to be in this world with Christine and watch this really interesting character, rather than wait for the suicide to happen.
Yeah, and it's trying to create reason behind it. And as we said at the start, it's not trying to define her by that as well.
Definitely.
And the news stories that she is trying to create that aren't sensationalist, that aren't blood and guts, and she's trying to make real news about real people. And you can see how she, her mind got distorted, in the way that people didn't want the things that she was wanting to give.
Yeah.
What I really liked about the suicide scene was, I knew it was gonna happen, but it didn't make it into like a huge thing. Like, it was terrible to watch it, but it wasn't like, it was like silently like built up, it wasn't like this big blowout of, oh my god, you know what I mean.
And it's not met with screaming,
it's met
with silence.
Yeah.
And I think the first person to speak is very typically Tracy Letts Michael. He says, very funny Chubbuck, thinking it's some sort of prank, like a joke, that she's sabotaged him.
Yeah,
I almost thought that it would be too gruesome to actually show, because you've gotten to really know Christine, and it doesn't matter if you like her at this point. You are just grateful to share her world and to understand her. And by the time because when it's coming it's about to. And once she takes her gun and just puts it behind her ear, and you're like, okay, this is it. The scene doesn't feel like, because obviously we are a YouTube people now, and the scene doesn't feel disrespectful. It doesn't feel exploitative either.
No.
This isn't done for the benefit of sensationalism. This is a life basically extinguished through being tired of fighting in the workplace, fighting as a woman, fighting her own body, and she is. Generally, you can see that fatigue. And then when she does that, I don't think she wants necessarily to die, rather than, I mean, it's always unresolved. This is what I love about this movie. It doesn't try and give you an explanation as to why she did this. It's really, it doesn't matter at the end.
Yeah. The 10 minutes kind of before that was excruciating. Because she wakes up in the morning and her face has changed and she actually looks quite content and quite happy.
Yeah.
And she strolls into work and actually says hello to people and sits down at her desk and engages. And it almost feels like the start of the film as well.
Yeah.
And that just made it even worse. And I was sitting next to Sam on this one and like, I had my hand over my face and my knees up because it was from the moment that she started smiling, I was like, right, this is it.
And as well, it's the VR fails, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's even more like it's happening sooner than you think.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, really not delicately done because it is shocking, but it's I know when they were shooting it, they shot a lot of this scene. They did a lot of coverage and ended up just doing a wide angle and that's it. And the gunshot that you hear is quite small.
Yeah.
It's not an explosive shot. It doesn't fill the room up. And I think that was correct.
Yeah. I was really happy that by the end, when she does it, a more cliche director might have gotten everything into slow motion, maybe a dramatic string and a sound and everybody running around kind of yelling or everything muted.
Yep.
But here it's realism is really what he's looking for.
This is where I think Christine handles this better than Jackie did. I wasn't on last week and I think I've spoken to you about it a bit, you disagree, but I think the way they show the JFK assassination at the end of Jackie is not handled very well at all, because I think it looks like it's like CGI and it's just there to be shocking.
Right.
Whereas this feels very natural. Mm. This feels how exactly it would happen, how it did happen. It's not like there's not a close up of her shooting herself in the head. It's kind of like the editing is happening like that. It's going to happen like that whether she shoots herself in the head or not.
Mm.
If you know what I mean. It's as if it's just a normal day. It's just a normal shot.
Eerily matter of fact.
It doesn't zoom in. It doesn't like...
Yeah, yeah.
There's no music. Yeah. I don't think there's any music in the film at all, is there?
There is.
But it's at very specific moments.
There's Roberta Flack as well. And the music's actually really, really nice.
Yeah.
It's quite
optimistic,
jolly.
I remember now. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the Manchester by the Sea music is actually not too sad either.
Yeah.
There we are. So, I'm going to seek out some Roberta Flack, I think.
Yeah. I really love the last scene as well. The very last scene.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
With her friend Jean, who we haven't talked about, because she didn't really do that much. She's just kind of there as Christine's slight confidant, in a way.
Yeah, but also Christine views her as some kind of rival as well. Mm. She's not. Jean is only trying to be to be good.
Because earlier in the film, when Christine's upset, Jean says, when I'm sad, what I like to do is I like to eat ice cream and sing. And Christine just says, I've got to go back to work.
There
and
is some... Yep.
The last scene after Christine is now dead, which we don't even see her die, which is really interesting. She's in hospital for a while in a coma. The last scene is just Jean going home, eating ice cream and singing. Very matter of fact.
I think that made me even more sad.
They have to carry on with their lives after this.
We should start wrapping up there, I'm afraid. But do seek out Antonio Campos's Christine. As I said, it's on Curzon Home Cinema now. Speaking of Curzon Home Cinema, we've got our recommendations, one each, if you please. So, Sam, on Home Cinema at the moment, what would you like to tell the people what to watch?
Well, so Danny Boyle's T2 Trainspotting is out as of today. So, what better time to go back and revisit T1? Trainspotting.
T1 A New Hope.
T1 A New Hope, yeah. And then T2 Judgment Day. It's one of the best British films of all time, Trainspotting. One of the best portrayals of addiction, and I think Danny Boyle's best film. And that's on Curzon Home Cinema right now. So check that out. Trainspotting, I think, is a lot of people's favourite films, and I think a lot of people have had the Trainspotting poster on their walls.
Yeah.
I know I have.
Yeah.
It's really nostalgic. It's aged very, very well, I think.
Yep.
So yeah, Trainspotting.
Danny?
I'm going to go for another documentary, and I'm going to go for Man on Wire. That's one of my favorite documentaries. Again, a character portrayal and a big build-up in the end.
Yeah, and they don't show the thing because no one was filming it, which is mad. So it's completely made up of an amazing event that we never actually see, which I love. Ersi?
I'm going to go for a documentary, which is relevant to the movie that we've been speaking about. I'm going to go for Kate Plays Christine, which is about actress Kate Scheele, preparing for her role to play Christine Chubbuck leading up to her suicide. Surprisingly enough, I thought that that movie was going to be, I was going to compare it to Christine all the time, but the message of the documentary is don't make a fictional film about this because it is horrible. So I think they work very, very well together.
Okay.
I definitely say if you're going to watch one, do try and watch the other because they complement each other very, very well.
Yeah. And I'm actually just going to, it's new on Curzon Home Cinema, I'm going to mention Wiener Dog because there is a nice angry Tracy Letts in there as well.
Ah,
so do check that out if you haven't seen Wiener Dog. Right. It's a lovely story about a dog. So do find it. Right. That's all we got time for. We will be back for Tony Erdmann next week. And we hope you join us. Until then, it is goodbye from Sam.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Danny.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from Ersi.
See you later.
And goodbye from me. I'm off to go and eat some ice cream and sing to myself.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.